from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Penny Nelson. Well, we start today with more election results. And first up, another setback for California Republicans as Democrats claimed victory yesterday in the last remaining undecided House seat. Back on election night, Fresno businessman T.J. Cox trailed the GOP incumbent Congressman David Valadao by 4,400 votes. But as thousands of outstanding ballots streamed in, Cox pulled ahead and the Democratic challenger declared victory yesterday afternoon. Assuming Cox's lead holds, Democrats will have a nationwide pickup of 40 seats, the most since 1974 when they gained 49 during the Watergate scandal. And in perhaps the most surprising election result in California, a retired lieutenant with little command experience has beaten incumbent L.A. County Sheriff Jim McDonnell. The latest vote count released this week confirmed Alex Villanueva's upset win, as Frank Stoltz of KPCC reports.
L.A. sheriff's races usually focus on crime and little else. It's a nonpartisan office. But Alex Villanueva was able to brand the incumbent as an ally of President Trump because of the sheriff's opposition to a new state law limiting cooperation between local police and federal immigration agents. The county Democratic Party, in turn, endorsed him and sent out a mailer with side-by-side photos of the incumbent and the president. Villanueva billed himself as a reformer, promising to fire corrupt sheriff's officials, revisit plans for a new jail, and find alternatives to incarceration for people with mental illnesses. But he also said he sympathized with deputies' complaints about new limits on the use of force against inmates, a mandate imposed after a federal investigation found widespread abuses. The deputies' union was his biggest financial backer. Outgoing Sheriff Jim McDonnell, elected after the previous sheriff was convicted of corruption, warned against backsliding on reforms. The department is the largest sheriff's agency in the world, with nearly 10,000 deputies and jails that hold more than 18,000 inmates. For the California Report, I'm Frank Stoltz.
San Francisco Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi took a big step towards her goal of becoming Speaker of the House again in the new Congress. But KQED's politics editor Scott Schaefer reports Pelosi still has some work to do.
Despite calls to step aside for a new generation of leadership, Pelosi has been winning over opponents in recent days. And when Democrats met behind closed doors Wednesday, the caucus nominated her for Speaker by a vote of 203-32. But she'll need to win over at least 15 more skeptical Democrats to win a majority of the full House when Congress elects a new Speaker in January. Another California Democrat, Oakland Congresswoman Barbara Lee, lost her bid to be Democratic caucus chair. The winner was 48-year-old Congressman Hakeem Jeffries from New York, who's widely regarded as a rising star. Both Lee and Jeffries are members of the Congressional Black Caucus, but while Lee is a 20-year veteran of the House, Jeffries is serving in just his third term. Some Democrats have been calling for fresh faces to replace Pelosi and her top lieutenants, who are all in their late 70s. For the California Report, I'm Scott Schaefer.
Let's shift now to fire news. Governor Brown signed an executive order late yesterday to help school districts affected by wildfires. It waives things like class size requirements and lets the Paradise Unified School District teach students at temporary facilities, even if kids now live outside the district. This comes as students and teachers are planning to return to school next week, many in porta cabins or other schools, because their classrooms are no longer standing. KQED's Michelle Wiley has more.
In the charred remains of Paradise Elementary School, you can see the desks are still in a line, but they barely resemble what they used to be. Metal frames with their plastic tops melted off. In one, you can still see a spiral of a notebook that's turned to ash. You can also see where a 2-by-10-foot beam fell right on that line of desks. School was in session when the campfire started. A fire that has burned more than 150,000 acres and claimed the lives of over 80 people. But in the rare good news from this horrific event, all the kids from Paradise Elementary were able to escape. That's because teachers and staff put kids in cars and buses and got them out. Leland Ratcliffe is a captain of the Feather River Hotshots, essentially the Marines of firefighters.
They're definitely heroes. They saved hundreds and hundreds of kids. Without them, their parents weren't there. They wouldn't have had anybody.
Teachers went back to work this week. To get ready, the Butte County Office of Education held meetings with school psychologists and counselors on how to get teachers ready to talk to their students. Matthew Redham lives in Butte Creek Canyon and works as a consultant with the county.
The brain picks up on so many things that we don't think about that are safe. The trees, the look of the school, the smell. So even if we don't like school, school provides our brain and our body with some sense of soothing. When you then eliminate that and you eliminate your home, the thing that remains are the relationships that you had.
That's why the county is trying so hard to keep students with their teachers, for a sense of normalcy. Redham says that teachers shouldn't try to be counselors in the aftermath. There are trauma specialists coming in from all over to do that. But instead, they should focus on what they do best, teach. For the California Report, I'm Michelle Wiley.
Meanwhile, a team of researchers at the University of Southern California has developed a polio vaccine that does not need to be refrigerated. KPCC's Michelle Faust-Raghavan explains why that's important.
The world is on the brink of completely eradicating polio, a disease that can cause lifelong paralysis, mostly starting in childhood. There are a handful of countries where it hasn't been wiped out. Political instability can be a barrier to vaccination, so is the lack of refrigeration. The USC scientists came up with a method to freeze-dry the polio vaccine. They kept it at room temperature for 4 weeks, then used it successfully on mice. They're working on ways to keep the vaccine at room temperature for at least 3 months, since that's typically how long it's stored in remote health outposts. The researchers hope an outside company or foundation will take over their project to pay for studies on humans. For the California Report, I'm Michelle Faust-Raghavan in Los Angeles.
Wet and windy weather is hitting Northern California today. Rain on fire? That's good. But as National Weather Service meteorologist Idamas Del Valle says, today's current system brings with it a chance of thunderstorms, heavy rainfall in short periods of time, and gusty winds. All that could be problematic in the burn areas where mudslides and mud flows, as well as flash flooding, remain a concern. So while the urban flood advisory for the Sacramento and San Joaquin valleys has been lifted, a flash flood watch is in effect in all recently burned areas until 4 o'clock this afternoon. In Southern California's Riverside County, mandatory evacuation orders are in place for those near the town of Lake Elsinore and the region where the Holy Fire burned earlier this year. Another rain system is on its way, expected to arrive early Friday and continue into the weekend. Earlier this week, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said that Customs and Border Protection agents used, quote, an appropriate level of force this weekend after using tear gas on hundreds of migrants on the border in Tijuana. As KPBS reporter Priya Srether tells us, agents have been using tear gas since 2010.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents have used tear gas 29 times from October of last year to this year. That's a 7-year high. A spokesperson for the agency says the chemical was deployed Sunday as a response to assaults on federal officers and agents and to defuse a dangerous situation. Art Del Cueto is with the National Border Patrol Council, a labor union representing CBP agents.
The agents felt their life was in danger, and that was the last resort that they were able to use to stop the threat.
According to CBP data, agents used tear gas 79 times during President Barack Obama's second term. For the California Report, I'm Priya Srether in San Diego.
On a different front now, a state appeals court has upheld California's right-to-die law. The court's decision overturns a lower court's ruling that briefly blocked dying patients' access to lethal medications last spring. KQED's April Demboski has more.
Since June 2016, terminally ill patients in California have had the right to take life-ending drugs prescribed by their doctor. The legislature wrote into the law that two doctors must first confirm the patient will die within 6 months and is mentally competent to make that choice. In May, a Riverside judge halted enforcement of the law after it was challenged by a group of doctors and the Christian Medical and Dental Society. Now, the appeals court has decided to overturn the Riverside decision and uphold the law. Justice Manuel Ramirez says the doctors did not have legal standing to sue because the law does not require them to prescribe the life-ending drugs. Therefore, he said they have nothing to gain or lose from the law's enforcement. However, the justice ended his opinion, saying, "It is possible we will see this case again." Lawyers for the doctors say they are considering their options, whether to return to trial court or appeal to the state Supreme Court. For the California Report, I'm April Demboski.
So when voters legalized recreational marijuana in California, many expected a windfall of tax revenue. And that hasn't quite panned out yet, but it soon could. As KQED's Katie Orr reports, the wrangling over how to spend it is already beginning.
The new cannabis law offers some flexibility in how tax revenues can be used. 60% of the unrestricted funds must be designated for programs geared toward youth education, prevention, early intervention, and treatment. That leaves a lot of leeway for the governor and the legislature, and that is where the horse trading will come in.
All things in the state budget have competition.
Erin Gable is with First Five California, an independent state commission that promotes early childhood development. She says there are a number of areas that could qualify for funding and most align with Governor-elect Gavin Newsom's policy priorities.
Early education, child care, investments in prenatal care and after-school programs.
It's not yet known how much money there will be to go around. Because the legal market is so new, it's been difficult to accurately predict revenues ahead of time. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
Support for the California Report comes from Personal Capital, providing customers a real-time dashboard view into all of their financial accounts with insight-driven wealth advisory services. PersonalCapital.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And Supermicro, a Silicon Valley-based manufacturer of energy-efficient data center hardware solutions, celebrating 25 years of growth and innovation. Learn more at supermicro.com.
There has been so much news lately with fires and migrants at the border that this next story might have passed unnoticed, but it shouldn't. California has voted in its first female lieutenant governor, Eleni Kounalakis. She spoke with politics reporter Marisa Lagos about how she plans to increase funding for higher education and keep tuition down. Here's Lieutenant Governor-elect Kounalakis.
When I went to UC Berkeley for graduate school, I got an MBA there back in 1992, and I paid about $5,000, $6,000, something like that, per year. You know, my father went from the fields of California to the halls of Sacramento State University, where he paid $62 a semester, including books. We've got to provide the necessary funding out of the general fund, but we also need to look at new forms of revenue. And one of the things I think we need to be looking at is potentially going to the voters with a bond to update and expand our facilities.
I mean, just to push you on one thing, you know, a bond would be paid out of the general fund. General fund funding comes out of the general fund. We've seen, you know, California's pretty volatile revenue stream really fluctuate during recessions. Is that the best way to be funding higher education?
Well, I absolutely hear that. But I do think that bond financing allows us to do more with less because we can extend those payments over time. But I also think that when we look at the fact that this big booming economy of California, the fifth largest economy in the world, has largely been fueled by the fact that we have this highly educated workforce. These are the things that we need to focus on, and I really intend to be working hard on.
Thank you so much for your time, Lieutenant Governor-elect Eleni Kounalakis.
Thank you, Marisa.
And that, my friends, is the California Report for Thursday, November 29th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Penny Nelson. Have a great day.